All right, basketball fans, welcome into another Ball Movement. I'm Matt Moderno. He's Mike Creppy. Mike, I think we got another hooper here today in honor of the WNBA draft going on. You know, it's nice to have a female baller joining us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Matt. We have a big guest coming on. She is a big-time player, played big-time college basketball. She's also a very enterprising woman. So we're going to get into that as well as, you know, her basketball background and her path overseas and her journey.
Yeah, that's Akilah Bethel for everybody. Give her a quick Google. Give her a couple minute highlight reel watch. You'll see some good stuff there too. And like Mike said, she's got a lot of other stuff going on off the court. I think you guys actually have a lot in common. You know, she's trying to get other people more opportunities to play basketball and stuff too. So should be some interesting conversation, I think.
Yeah, this market is really opening up with a lot of players giving back, you know, utilizing their experience to try to open it up and give more education to players as they're pursuing this industry.
I think just a little tease for everybody, you know, Akilah's played in a couple countries where we haven't had guests that have played so far, so that'll be good. She's the first Harlem Globetrotter to appear on the show, so that's pretty cool to have on her resume as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the Globetrotters, they've been pretty big on inclusion over the last, you know, decade. So it's going to be interesting to hear, you know, what her experience is like and just to see, you know, from what we might know about the Globetrotters, to get some inside information about like what actually goes on while playing for them.
Just before we get to our convo with Akilah, just a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA playoffs, fights, and even the next season's futures. And don't forget that the MLB is back as well. Who are you picking to win the World Series? BetOnline is your continued source for all your favorite sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head on over to the website or use the mobile device today to join up and use our promo code BELIEF, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that, let's get to our conversation with Akilah. Our guest today was a first-team all-conference in the prestigious Washington Catholic Athletic Conference, so everybody in the DMV will know about that, too. Led LSU in steals as a versatile forward in 2015-2016, was averaging 22 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals in Ukraine until certain global circumstances put an end to that. So we've got a Harlem Globetrotter here, founder and commissioner of the Bethel League. Akilah Bethel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I want to kind of start out a little bit. You know, we're focused more on sort of the overseas career here and kind of how you transition into professional life. But I started at West Virginia. You ended up at LSU. Kind of talk us through, you know, that process. You know, was that with WNBA in mind, professional basketball in mind? Like what kind of led you that route?
Well, it's definitely always with, you know, WNBA in mind. But, you know, I don't think I was playing as much as I felt like I should have been at West Virginia. And I played one of my better games against LSU that season before I transferred. And I just liked their style of play. And I thought it would potentially fit me better, which I ended up playing more, but I wasn't at my right position. I wasn't, you know, the Akilah I was in 2011 when I was in high school. So that kind of hit me hard too, emotionally, I guess.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Did you make the decision to leave, or was it something that your family was influencing you to do? Because you see now with the transfer portal, there's a lot more player empowerment now. And this was, what, 11 years ago that you did this. So, you know, what was your thought process? Were you like, look, I know who I am as a player. I know where I want to be. And did that like kind of determine how you went about your transfer period?
Well, I think for me, I originally wanted to transfer after my freshman year, but I felt like I didn't do everything that I was supposed to do. I didn't put my all in. I didn't work hard enough. So I was like, you know what? Let me do what I'm supposed to do and still see if I feel this way. And I did. I had had multiple meetings with the coach and stuff. And for me, it was just like, why am I not playing? You know, I'm in practice, busting their ass. I need answers. You know, it would have been fine. Like, look, you just tell me straight up what your turn, what have you, X, Y, and Z. Because I didn't understand. Like, granted, I made mistakes, but I felt like I had put in so much work over the summer. I didn't have good work ethic coming into college. So that's originally why I was like, you know what? My freshman year, that's on me. I didn't play a lot. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. But sophomore year, I came back. I was in shape, better player, worked all through the summer on my skills and everything. And it still kind of was, I wasn't playing that much. I played more than my freshman year, but it was like, I just didn't understand. Because I felt like I did everything that was asked of me. And I wasn't getting the results. So to me, it was kind of like, well, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, like on a on homework, you answer all the questions correctly, you get an A.
Yeah.
So it was really my decision. My decision to go to West Virginia was based on my family, being close to them, my mom and stuff. And I didn't even take all my visits, which was my fault. I was the first in my family, so I was really the guinea pig of it all. And didn't know much and all of that. So
no, but I mean, not to harp on a college point, but college is based on the coaching system. You can do everything within your power to get in shape, play well. And it's almost like, because obviously, you know, we both play Division One. It's like if the coach doesn't like you, if you get a steal, it's not because you play good defense, it's because they made a bad pass. You know, and
felt like I fit in West Virginia's system. You know, I was playing my natural position. I was playing the three. I was playing the 1-3-3. I didn't even touch the post ever, you know? And the first time I actually did, because I wanted to play, we was playing against Baylor. People had fouled out. He was like, can you play the four? And I'm the type of player, I know all of the positions. I'm versatile. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I can play the four. And at one time I played the four, tore my ACL. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, you know, we shooting threes. I mean, I wasn't the best three-point shooter, but I had more of the go to the best. So I felt like I had added more to his scheme. Like, I felt like his system was actually really good for me. I just didn't really understand why I wasn't playing.
Yeah.
That's a mature thing to realize, though, that, you know, after the first year, like, hey, let me put this work in and then give myself a better opportunity. And sometimes it's still just not going to work out, right? Like, no matter where you end up. Did coming to those kind of realizations make, you know, this switch overseas like a little easier? Because I'm imagining that's something that happens when you are playing in a foreign country and things like that too.
The switch was so easy. I felt like I could finally be myself. Mm-hmm. I felt like I didn't have the college career that I wanted. I didn't have the college career that I could have had. I honestly feel like had I been better at picking schools, really going on visits, especially that first time around, you know, my five college visits, and I still regret this because Dawn was my fifth visit. Ooh. That was when she first got to South Carolina.
That would have been a good fit.
Yeah.
I didn't go. You know, I think a lot of us get caught up in the hype of how D1 and certain things. And instead of going to play, I mean, I had high D1s and I had mid-majors. Like, I had James Madison that was on my list that I should have went to as well. But I feel like I didn't have the best college career because I never found my school. Mm-hmm. I never found my fit where I was supposed to be. Like, it was always something. And then I had to sit out that year back then. Once I got overseas, it was like somebody broke the shackles off me. Like, all right.
Yeah, facts.
I got to be myself.
That's exactly how I felt my first year. Like, it was just like, I could finally, they had me here to be a pro and nobody's restricting what I got to do. Either I can do the job or I can't do the job. And that's all I ever wanted.
Yeah.
And so I definitely relate to that.
Cause you look at my college stats. I mean, honestly, it looked like I sucked. Look at my stats. It's like, I don't think she can move. And that may be the story for a lot of us, you know, cause it's like, shit, what can I do? Can't do nothing.
Yeah. Opportunity's huge, and then confidence in your abilities to go out and do those things. And if you know, if you think you're doing the right stuff and still not playing, it probably eats away at your confidence too, I would think.
Yeah, I think my LSU years killed my confidence in playing basketball in general. I honestly didn't even want to play anymore. Mm-hmm. But playing professional was always a dream of mine, especially the WNBA. And I was like, you know what? Let me give it a shot. You know, I owe that to myself. I still was blessed to be able to get an agent. You know, obviously LSU carries that weight and go overseas. So, I mean, the path that was supposed to happen, I guess, happened.
So what was that? That was a great segue, because what was that process like when you finished your last year at LSU? and then you started looking at your professional options. We had Lindsay Pulliam on. Lindsay played at, she's one of my young fellas, young girls that I've known since she was 10 back home in Maryland. And she was talking about her process, and we didn't realize that the women's game doesn't have like pre-draft camps and workouts and any of that. So what was your process like coming from, because she was all conference in the Big Ten and everything like that. So what was your process like when you left LSU?
Well, I was originally supposed to go to a combine, and then I randomly, I guess, like checked my Facebook and LinkedIn, and I had these agents hit me up. So after I signed with them, I essentially really got a deal pretty quickly. I just stayed at LSU the majority of the summer and worked out and conditioned a little bit. And then I got home to my guy, Jimmy, and got loose, you know, got my wiggle back. Started to work out heavy. And when I went over there, it was cool. I mean, obviously the practices are a lot different and everything, but
where were you that first year, Akil?
Luxembourg.
Okay.
Luxembourg.
So was that like one of several offers you had, and you chose from that from a couple options, or how did that kind of go?
No, I think with my, you know, stats being the way they were, all I really had was the fact that I played at LSU. Because at some point, obviously, you can't really suck if you're
exactly
at that type of school. So I really didn't have much options. And I felt like for my rookie year, I got a decent amount. Not having played well in college, I was just like, all right, let's take this one so I get out of here and make my money.
Yeah, but see, that's the mindset, though, that we tell a lot of players, you know, that we hope a lot of players, when they hear this, is they think that just because they believe their talent is comparable to somebody that might have had a great college career. You know, we all work out with all different types of people. People who get drafted, people who, you know, are in college still, people who are overseas. And, you know, you might get the better of somebody who's in the league, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you demand what they get. And a lot of players miss that. So I think you were really smart. And, like, you were ahead of the curve, learning curve, understanding, like, where you were in the market. But still having confidence in your ability, knowing that you could play at a high level, but you understood where you were at that time. And I think that served you well throughout your career, because a lot of people make mistakes.
It was kind of hard as well, because a lot of my first three or four agents only put me places so they can make money. I never really went up in money. Like my first 4 years, I was making the same amount of money that I was my rookie year.
Oh, wow.
And then obviously Luxembourg is a hard place to come out of.
Yeah.
Because it's that stigma, like, you're obviously not that good. You're only playing in Luxembourg. So
exactly.
I had the same issue with choosing the college that I had with agents. It was just like, you know, I had quit a lot of, I haven't played, you know, 6 years straight. Mm-hmm. I quit like a year and then I went back, and then like, it was this love hate. Cause I was just like, all right, this is just going in the same direction, like, here, go here, because that's the best you're going to get, instead of really pushing me. And I don't know, I just didn't have good agents my first 4 years. Like, I was in Luxembourg, and then I was in Czech Republic, took a pay cut going to Czech Republic, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
People listening to this don't realize sort of what that agent dynamic is like overseas. It's not like playing in the States where like they're making a percentage off of your salary. It's teams are paying, you know, them directly to bring players in and things like that. So they're getting paid regardless. And maybe even, you know, they're making more to bring a player like you to a lower league, even if it's not the best for you.
Yeah. And I feel like because I'm like a 3/4, oftentimes I get lowballed because I'm an undersized 4. Mm. But, you know, after coming from being MVP in Puerto Rico and then Ukraine, I'm like, that's done. Mm-hmm. I've proven myself. I've always been one of those people. Like, I got to prove it to myself, but I'm going to prove it to you too. You're going to run me my money. I'm not doing this no more. Yeah. But, I mean, the overseas process is really different, even when it comes to, like, the protection of the players as far as the teams go and everything. You know, like my last year in Sparta at Luxembourg, they still owe me money. They just stopped answer on the phone, and it wasn't anything anybody can do. You know, I feel like the teams really have a lot of power in terms of us, what they can do, what they don't do. Like, it's tough. It's different. It's not all glitz and glamour. I know a lot of people look at us on Instagram and, you know, we're going out seeing things historic and, you know, going to parties and all this beautiful culture and everything. And then, you know, we do that to stay sane. Sure. You got to have some type of balance. It's not all glitz and glamour. You know, I tell the young kids, because I have a lot of young girls DM me about stuff. And I'm like, you know, I'm just honest. Like, you really mentally have to be made for this. Yeah. Like, that's 8 straight months of a culture barrier of shit. By the time you get to February, you're like, it's time to wrap it up. It's time to go home.
After the second month for me, I'm over it. And then it's just like, I lose myself in basketball. And you got to love the game. Like, if you don't love basketball, you're going to be miserable overseas. Because there's only so much that you can take being away from your family and everything that you know. So if you don't love the game, you think it's just what Akila was saying, like lifestyle, you're going to be miserable.
I mean, and there's so many moving parts. It's loving the game. It's your teammates. It's coaches. It's agents. It's just like, because sometimes, like my rookie year, I ain't, towards the last part, I ain't like my team.
Then like your teammates and the coaching staff and things like that?
No, I didn't like my teammates.
That's interesting. I want you to elaborate on that, because I've always had like this observation that women teams have way more fun with each other than men teams. Like, you guys take, y'all making TikTok videos and y'all just had, even like in college, like the girls teams were way more connected than the guys teams. And so I always thought like, and I told some of my friends that play ball, like, y'all have some that played on the women's team, y'all have way more fun than us. And it's like, I always looked at that dynamic, and usually they were better than us on the court because of that tightness off the court. But for you to say you didn't like your teammates, like, what led to that?
My rookie year, it didn't start off like that. It didn't start off like that. I thought they were cool at first. I'm somebody like, I'm very open at first, and then, but I changed that as I got older, because, so what led to it is I think our last game of the season going into playoffs, they was just hating, and they didn't carry me correctly. Like, it was like, who are y'all talking to?
Yeah.
A girl that wasn't even playing on the bench, running her mouth about something that didn't even matter. We beat the team by 30. And y'all over here with an attitude. The captain came up to me, snatched the stat sheet out of my hand. I was like,
is that a jealousy thing or?
I don't know. I think like as Americans, we go over there a lot of the times, and it's not all the teams, but a lot of locals just feel like they don't need us. This girl, the big girl, had got injured and she was just on the bench. And she was old too. So I was like telling the captain I didn't play defense. I was walking. Now, mind you, she big and slow, can't do anything, whether she's healthy or not. So I don't really understand why she has something to say. But it was the snatching of the stat sheet and the yelling. And I asked her, was this serious before I went off? Because I wasn't sure, you know, culturally, everyone's different. I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. So I asked before I went off. And then it was the wrap from there.
But see, like, before you go, Matt, like, you have to compose yourself when you're over here, because one, you know, obviously the disrespect is disrespect, but you took a step back and paused, because when we're over there, you're severely outnumbered. Man. Like, whether, you know what I'm saying? Like, we've heard stories recently. Now we have social media and more, you know, takes on what it's like being over there with players getting hurt and beat up and stuff like that. But it's like, you really have to like really prepare yourself, because when somebody disrespects you, you can't react as you would in the States. You don't have the same recourse. You don't have the same resources available to you. And you gotta take that. You gotta take it like Chris Rock, you know, like.
Oh, no, that I was young and unleashed. I was ready for all of them. Like, what's up? I don't got time for none of this. But I would say my last three teams, you know, Puerto Rico, Ukraine, and Turkey has been like heaven sent blessings.
Yeah.
Teammates, coaches. And I think like that's also, you know, when we go overseas, we got to talk to the coaches as well. Because all they see is highlights. I mean, don't get me wrong. I struggled a little bit in Turkey because the system playing-wise, mm-hmm. but coaches, teammates, we're all fine.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. like, a lot of the times, coaches only see highlights. They don't really see us, like, as players. And I really struggle when I'm trying to be put into a box. It's really hard for me to play. And I'm like, why am I only doing this? I can do this. I can do this. Like, yeah. I want to do everything.
I think for anybody that's not familiar with your game, Akilo, you know, listening to this, you can play multiple positions. You can put the ball on the floor. You can drive. You can pull up from the mid range. Like, you can defend. So just hearing you say that about being put in a box, like, if a coach is bringing you in, I would think they would want to do the exact opposite, right? Like, allow you to be flexible and versatile. And it seems like that would be kind of like the biggest advantage to having you on a team.
Yeah. And I feel like that's why I thrived in Ukraine. She understood. I mean, obviously, first couple games, she's looking at me, watching me, figuring out how I played. But after that, you know, she adjusted like, OK, she can do this. And she used me to where I could do everything. Like, I could bring the ball up and start the play or have the play ran for me. You know, I'm guarding point guards and stuff. So it was like, kid in Candyland, like, all right, well, she can do this. We don't have to really stop, outlet it to the point guard. Like, we can go. Like, mm-hmm. now we can put people in their other positions. Like, you can score, you can do this. Like,
was she a former player, your coach?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I remember hearing. So that makes sense to me. Because, yeah. you know, people who played understand, like, you don't always have to have a point guard dribbling the ball, initiating offense. Those are people who are trying to, they analyze the game from a distance. They've never actually played the game. So, like, you get a different experience when you have a coach that played the game. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, the traditional positions, especially, like, every day the game is changing. You know, I feel like more forwards are like me now. They're not mm-hmm. back to the basket. Power forwards, everyone is yeah. stretched now.
So in the Ukraine, let's just jump to Ukraine. So what was that situation like, since we're talking about, in terms of like when you were hearing about the war and what was going on? Because Matt Chipa actually played on the same team as one of my clients, Adrian Garbo. They were on the same team out there. So I kind of have a little bit of insight on what was happening with them, but I want to hear your experience, Akilo, because your experience was different than Adrian's.
Yeah. My experience, I communicated with, you know, the staff a lot. I was always talking to them every day. I really think that culturally, everyone's just different. I think to some point, you know, the Ukrainians were almost desensitized to it because Russia has been threatening war for 8 years. A little bit happened in 2014 and they sent everybody home. So I think they kind of was like, it's not going to happen again, which is understandable. They live in it. It's not like we here and somebody threatening war every day, because it'd be a different story, because it's not a natural part of our culture. It doesn't just happen. So I just openly communicated with them and I was like, look, I get y'all's standpoint. Like, I understand where y'all coming from. Y'all live here. I have somewhere to go. I have to go home. And I also pointed out, historically, when the U.S. gets involved, it's never a good thing. It never pans out to be any type of peaceful, like, let's just let it die down. That never happens. So, you know, I left for a few days. Then I came back and I just couldn't really sleep. And I just, you know, talked to her. I said, hey, look, I have to go home. I don't feel comfortable. I'm not sleeping right. It's not something ain't. It's in my loins, something not right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was like, I understand. Because by that time, you know, we had no way of making playoffs. So it was fine. I mean, she understood. I left and that was that.
But prior to that, when you guys realized that you guys weren't in playoff contention anymore and stuff like that, they were trying to keep y'all there.
Well, we still had an opportunity to make playoffs if the war didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because everybody, all the other Americans on the other teams had already left. Mm-hmm. We were some of the last ones that were there. So technically we still had an opportunity to make it.
I feel like they were kind of banking on that, knowing that the Americans were gone. You guys could kind of get some games, and they were only looking at, this is the conversation that I was having through Adrian with the team. It was like, they weren't even looking at the war part. They were just looking at, okay, these girls are gone. We can make some strides and try to get into the playoffs. And Adrian's like, look, I'm out of here. Like, I don't know what y'all talking about right now, but I'm not staying here. Like, she's hearing stuff in the background, tripping. And so, but the team didn't even, they never actually acknowledged the war and all of the messages that we had. They just kept dismissing it. Like you were saying, like, they might've been desensitized, but I was just like, the embassy is telling people to go home. Like, what more do we need to have her released so she can leave? And so, like, how long did it take? Talk about that. But also, as a second part to the question, how long did it take for you to get your release to sign in Turkey after you left?
Well, it didn't take me long. Once I texted them and told them that I had another place to play, I got my release. But I also think it's, it's ways to handle things. You know, overseas have grudges and things happen. And, you know, I think Adrian may have gone smooth if she would have talked to him herself. I don't know when Adrian got her release. You know,
we just got it like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Like, I didn't even know she left. It was like a thief in the night. I was like, where's she at?
No, Matt, look, she texted me. And she was like, I was like, Adrian, I looked at your contract. We have a way to, you know, to get you a buyout because we had another deal in Finland for her. And so I basically told her, just hold off for a day. Let's talk to the team so we can go through the proper channels. Like Akilah was saying, there's a protocol that you go through. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, got my COVID test. I'm leaving in the morning. And the team didn't even know until she was in Istanbul. And so they kind of like Akilah was saying, they held a grudge. They were like, well, we want this amount of money for her release. And she had fulfilled all of her contractual obligations. And because of the, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the clause? I'm having a brain freeze right now. Force majeure. Because in a contract, we had a force majeure clause. So basically any act of God or anything like that, she's automatically released. And the team is released from repaying her. But she didn't wait, you know, so they held the grudge. And like, we literally just got her release and she just got signed at Mexico in their top league. But It was a lot, man, because she lost a really good deal in Finland to finish out the season in Europe. And, you know, as we know, Europe is the top league, top level for women's sports and basketball. So it was tough. Like, but had she gone about it like Akilah, she probably wouldn't have had that issue.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hard decision. I mean, don't get me wrong. I definitely was like having some sleepless nights and things like that. But it was more so, like I said, you know, playing overseas, you got to kind of, with contracts and FIBA, I mean, I honestly blame the federation. I don't even blame the team. Like, they should have shut it down. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't even been a conversation. Like, the federation should have shut it down. But they're sending out, you know, they were sending emails saying that the season's continuing. And of course, you know, if the head honchos aren't shutting it down, they're not going to send us home.
Yeah, exactly.
They still think it's safe to play. Like, I understand both parts, but, you know.
I'd be like scrolling through Instagram and I would see like on a news account, here's a tank rolling into the country. And you scroll down to the FIBA account and it's like, here's highlights from Ukraine. And you're like, wait, what are we doing here that this is still going on?
Yeah, the Federation should have shut it down because a lot of people had issues getting their release, getting sent home. You know, a lot of the men got caught over there. They weren't even getting paid.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the Federation's job, essentially.
So are you hearing from the U.S. State Department during all this? Like, is there?
I was getting emails. Yeah. I was getting emails and text messages, and it was really just my family that was blowing me up, honestly. And I was like, come on, guys, I'm trying to be a professional. I have to stay a lot of amount of time. I went back for the cup game. And after that, I was like.
Yeah, see, I was surprised you went back because I heard you went back.
I did go back. I left for a few days to see if things would calm down. And, you know, the cup game was important. Just kind of, I've had such a bad stigma early on in my career about my attitude and X, Y, and Z. And I'm finally, you know, striving towards my peak, reaching towards my peak. I didn't want to tarnish that relationship. Because I enjoyed my time in Ukraine as far as basketball is concerned. And I was just trying to go about it, you know, the right way to where all parties are happy. Like, look, this has the something has to give, you know, and I stayed, rocked it out for as long as I could. And you know, I left 4 days before it happened. So I was definitely getting close.
Was it hard to get out at that point? I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I flew to Egypt, so it wasn't too hard. I mean, the airports were definitely packed, and there was a lot going on in the airports, but it wasn't hard to get out.
Yeah, I would have for sure, if that was me and I'm going back to something that's on the brink of war, like, it would have been a quick renegotiation of my contract. Like, look, you want me to come back? I need this. I need three times as much, like.
I came back for, 2 days? I only came back for 2 days. Yeah. I left that third day.
Yeah. I was like, she went back? I was like, man. Yeah, it's all good, though. But you handled it like a pro. And, you know, and your mindset. I get it now, you know, just with the context and everything. But I was crazy because it happened so fast. Like, once it happened, it happened. And then. Like, so, like, I wasn't even, like, I was, like, I told Adrian she should have waited. But at the end of the day, I was like, you got out. That's all I was concerned about.
Yeah.
That all y'all made it back.
Important thing. I definitely wasn't staying. I was over there, like, all right, now, time to wrap it up. I can't sleep. Every little noise is freaking me out. But nobody, like, everybody was in Ukraine, you know, pretty normal, just walking around, going to get their breakfast and everything. Everything was easy peasy. Like, everything was normal in Ukraine until it wasn't.
Well, that's interesting.
Not to minimize sort of what they're going through from a sort of global perspective here, but just focusing on you, like, how tough is that mentally? Because it sounds like you've been a little bit snake bitten career wise, right? Like some bad luck, like the college situation, you tore an ACL, you know, you end up just kind of stuck in a pro league for a couple of years. That's maybe not where your talent sort of, you know, dictates. And then you're finally really like, you're rocking it over there. You're putting up huge numbers. And then this happens. Like how do you kind of juggle all that and kind of deal with that?
I mean, mentally, I was, once I left and it actually happened, I was struggling for a little bit because it was more so like, damn, like I was just there. And I felt bad for them too. Like, you know, they were just, like I said, still living their life. You know, it was, they had been threatening war for 8 years. It was tough. I was like, man, as soon as I get going, something happens. But I mean, I was relieved. I was upset. Emotionally, it took a toll on me for a while. But I gotta go on.
One of the questions we always like to ask on here is just like, what do players do to kind of protect their mental health while they're playing overseas? But what do you do in that situation to kind of like bounce back from that and head to the next job and get in the right mindset?
Just try to, whenever I try to refocus on basketball, I step away from basketball. I do everything but basketball. Like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to be in the gym. Don't throw me no ball. I'm going to go get my nails done, head done, do something completely on the other spectrum, other end of the spectrum to get myself, you know, refocused. Because a lot of times, like, we do need breaks. We need mental breaks. We need physical breaks. And I was just like, I'm not going in no gym. Give me some food. Let me sit here.
That's totally fair and understandable. All right, let's just take a quick break from the show to hear from one of our sponsors, Credit Karma. Paying down debt can be stressful, especially when you need to keep track of multiple monthly payments. If you're tired of juggling due dates, consolidating with a personal loan could be your answer. That way you'll have just one due date a month, and Credit Karma can help you find the best option for you. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you so that maybe you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Oh, maybe you want to take out a loan to go to the Final Four next year, to sit courtside at an NBA game, you know, one of those kinds of things. I'd like the real important stuff. Ready to apply? Head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Again, that's creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers. Credit Karma. Apply with more confidence today. Okay, with that, let's get back to the show. You are a globetrotter in your professional career overseas, literally, and now you are, you know, you've been a globetrotter here in the U.S. I think that that's pretty cool, and you're our first globetrotter on the show. So can you tell us about that experience?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was a globetrotter, it was cool. It was different. The best part was, you know, making the kids smile, obviously being the only girl on one of the teams. All of the young girls, you know, they looked up to me, wanted to be like me and stuff. And it was surreal. You know, globetrotters are like monumental stamp in history. And I was one, especially, I think I'm the only girl from Baltimore to ever be a globetrotter. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. You know, I had to choose, you know, basketball, globetrotter. So, you know. Basketball always wins my heart.
So check it though. So there's like, you know, when people hear globetrotters, right, they think of more of the entertainment value of it. And obviously they've transcended basketball and sports at this point. They're like a staple in culture, like you said. Mm-hmm. But like, who don't know, because I don't know, you know, like I've been in basketball my whole life. And I have this impression of the globetrotters as almost like a circus act. You know, the guys can do tricks and they put on a show. They're dumping the bucket of confetti on the generals, you know. But is there a level of basketball within that, or is it all like kind of like scripted, like WWE wrestling type stuff?
It's definitely basketball. You have to be able to play basketball to be a globetrotter. Mm-hmm. That's first and foremost. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're here to, or former, you got to say former, mm-hmm. globetrotter. We're here to, you know, make people smile, change the culture, have, you know, embrace all cultures, just change the world. That's really the staple for the globetrotters.
So is any of it like, do you guys know what's going to happen when it happens, or is some of it improvisation? Like in terms of like the tricks and all of that stuff.
Well, I can't really speak on that.
Okay.
That's trade secret.
Proprietary.
Yeah. Can't really speak on that.
Okay.
There are a lot of like really high level basketball players that end up on that team. And I think that's, you know, that speaks to that too. Like that it is a cool outlet and it is high level basketball involved there too. So.
And it's a different community, you know, you get a different outtake on basketball. It's kind of being with basketball without actually being in basketball. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not ready to give it up yet, but I'm a, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just curious because, you know, I've always looked at it from afar and, you know, you see the Amwell mixtape stuff, you see the Mall of Life stuff. And then like just
have you gone to a recent show?
No, I haven't.
You should go to a recent one. It's yeah. Changed a lot. It's still, you know, it's still the Globetrotters, but more like you said, a lot of people want to see that basketball aspect.
Yeah.
It is. It's a great show. Great game. Great show.
Was that just good timing for you, like where you were at career-wise? Like you talked about maybe kind of like losing the love for it a little bit. Like, was that just kind of a nice mental break maybe?
It came right on time. My first year of my league had just ended and I went and tried out You know, I hadn't played overseas, I think, by that time, what, 2 years? So I was like, that's what's up. Let me do this. And then it just, you know, I just got my love back. And we weren't on tour at the time. And I was able to go play in Puerto Rico. And that's when I was like, yeah, I'm going to go back overseas.
And you downplaying, like, you played, like, really well in Puerto Rico. Like, what was your experience like that there in their top league?
So I honestly went into this because, you know, I played in Puerto Rico before and I got cut. I played on Santo SA back in 2018 and they sent me home. And I've been trying to get back to Puerto Rico ever since. So this was like, this was personal. This was really personal for me. Like, oh, y'all played.
The revenge tour, right?
Man, this has literally been the only team to like, out of my professional career, I've never been cut. And I was cut in Puerto Rico. And I was like, oh, y'all played. Let me show y'all that y'all tried it. I'm not playing with y'all at all. So, and it really just helped me get my confidence back. It got my swag back. It got my, like, okay, I'm looking at the game different. I'm not just out there forcing it. I'm letting it come to me. I'm just hooping. And I think my first couple years of professional basketball, I was like, I just wanted to prove to everybody that I was this player. And it wasn't happening. And this time it was like, I'm proving it to myself, but you're going to kick rocks while you watch it, you know? So
there you go.
It was amazing. I enjoyed it.
You got the MVP of the league, right?
Yeah.
Hey, come on, like talk your talk. Like
I was on a mission. Look, I was on a mission. I was coming for everyone's head at that point. You know, people didn't think that I was that good. They, you know, didn't understand why I was on Cedra. Couldn't believe I got picked up again. And then I played them. I was like, oh, she didn't play like that with us. Well. It's crazy when you let players actually play, what happens?
Exactly. And give some context, because you guys weren't even projected to make the playoffs, and you guys finished third, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finished third in the regular season. I think everybody was out to get us.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when you have Puerto Rico is very traditional in the sense of, like, these are the teams that are supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have us, this Cinderella underdog team that first time in the league got players that nobody really knows. They got one girl that had got cut years ago. You know, new comes, Imani comes. We got all of the quote-unquote last picks of the Puerto Rican draft. Nobody's really, you know, looking at us. And then we come and we messing everybody's little brackets up.
We
messing everything up. And
Aquila got MVP, Matt. And then Adrian, who was on her team again in Puerto Rico, she got Defensive Player of the Year. So they were, like, really making some noise. I thought you guys were going to make a push because that would have been crazy. First year in the league that y'all won it all. But, man, you know, it was still a great season.
They weren't going to let it happen.
Yeah.
We was having issues with y'all can't play in y'all home gym. So we lost the first playoff game. Then, like, the refs, I was over it.
Yeah. But the fans, though, that you guys had a great fan base.
Oh, the fans was amazing. They were amazing. I think once they seen how passionate and how hardworking. Because also, Matt, we was rocking with like 7 people. By the time we got down to that semifinals game, well, we had 7. One girl was 6.
Tight-knit group.
So we really had 6. One girl that hadn't played all year was now playing. Coach left. Another player left. It was crazy.
That just sounds like a fun basketball experience, though. Like, everybody likes being the one to kind of shut everybody in the gym up, and then you got fun fans, and it's just like kind of your small, like, crew of players, you know, like that sounds awesome.
It was so much fun. I, like, that was by far, like, one of the best experiences I've I've had thus far.
Did that open a lot of other doors up for you, you know, like for the next year and stuff like that? Once you have MVP next to your name, no matter, you know, what the league is, like what then the circumstances that has to help for the next job.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for in Mexico. MVP calling my name.
Is that next season?
You going down there too?
Yeah. I'm going when I leave. I leave Saturday.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I think AJ's about to leave. She's waiting on her visa. But But now Mexico's paying.
Where's she going?
She's going to Jalapa, Halcones.
Ah, got you. Yeah,
she's going there. They just announced it the other day. But like once they played well, like all of them got really good deals and have kept getting good deals after that season. Yeah. So shout out Puerto Rico. You know, they really opened up the doors to these players and let them basically showcase themselves and, you know, prove that they are who they say they are. Because like she was saying, you know, teams are so traditional in the way they recruit and scout. And once you have like a stigma to your name or you got cut or they think you're a certain type of player, they keep looking at you that way, despite what you've done and become. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just a good situation for those players on that team because they could all play. Like the way I look at players and the way other teams look at players are totally different. I can see that they can play. We just need to get them in there so they can prove it. And then once they prove it, now the whole narrative changes. Now it's like, oh, we want you. But the energy was totally different 6 months ago.
Right. And so I think Puerto Rico is definitely an underrated league. I think as far as, I guess, I don't even think they're classified as South American leagues. I don't know. As far as leagues go, summer leagues, they're definitely one of the top leagues. I think, you know, Europe looks down on them a little bit in terms of like, oh, you played in Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico is a fast league. It's 3 months of you playing essentially back to back. You know how hard it is to play 40 minutes on a Monday, then come back on a Wednesday and Thursday and then have off on Friday, then come back Saturday and still be able to average 20 something points a game.
It's a lot.
And rebounds and deep, like, it's not where, you know, where you're, you practice for a week, you have one, maybe two games and another week. Like,
so what was your recovery routine like? Did they have like physios there or were you on your
own? Yeah, we had physios, eventually got the pool. it was a lot of massages and stuff because I couldn't move.
Yeah.
I got to a point where I was like, maybe I'll just sit out the first part of warm up. Give me some icy hot.
Yeah. Do you have to bring a lot of that stuff with you too? Like an icy hot or things like that? Or is that stuff that they supply?
No, that's stuff that they supply. I mean, a lot of us, if you've been doing this long enough, you just automatically bring certain things because it's like, you don't really want to rely on them for everything because really, truly only you know your body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we normally bring bands and we bring our own foam rollers. Some people have bought Normatex. They bring them themselves. I haven't gotten that far yet, but I probably will be eventually.
Yeah, you got to invest. Like, you have to invest.
We've heard a lot of mixed things, right? Like some people we've talked to, they've had to go across the street themselves to McDonald's to get bags of ice and like because the team's not providing things like that. So it's interesting to hear just sort of like, you know, what you get in different leagues and how much they actually try to take care of the players.
Oh yeah, it definitely depends. It depends on the league. It depends on the country. It depends on the team. It's so many, like I said, it's so many moving factors and moving parts. That's why it's kind of like, you have to talk to them ahead of time. You have to kind of put yourself out there like, hey, like, well, we have this. Is there a way to do this? Is there a way to get this? And obviously it's always going to be a learning curve, a learning situation, especially coming out of college. You don't really know what you need, what you're getting into. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's an agent that's just trying to make this quick little percentage, not really looking out for you. As long as they get paid, they get paid. So, you know, I always tell them, like, ask for this, ask for the recovery, definitely ask for the car, the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is the most important thing.
There you go.
Hey, you know.
Hey, look, Matt, one thing I heard about Akilah is she is not shy about telling the team what she wants. And I think more players need to do that, you know, because we're the ones out there, right? And a lot of times players, been like that my first 2 years, you know, you don't want to ruffle the feathers. You don't want to rock the boat too much. And so, you know, you don't want to seem like you're too needy or a diva and all of these things. But at the end of the day, like, you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you. And you need to tell them what you need to do your job, you know? And then once you have the leverage, then it's like, look, this is what I need to be comfortable. You know, because at first you're just trying to get what you need to do your job, to get what you're worth. And then once you have played yourself into that position, like, now it's like, all right, almost like you hear about these entertainers. I need all green M&Ms in my dressing room. They've earned the right to ask for it. Yeah, they've earned the right to ask for that. You know, they didn't come out the gate. So, you know, that's something that, you know, I think is really important that people should learn from Aquilas, that, you know, for the players out there listening, just make sure you guys, and do it in a professional way. You know, you don't want to, like, basically seem like you're condescending or anything. Just tell them, hey, look, this is what I need. I want to help the team out, but, you know, in order for me to do my job, I need these things.
And I think the most important thing is to not overdo it. And it's basic necessities.
You're asking for reasonable stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. It's Wi-Fi. I need to talk to my family. I need to be able to watch my shows, because essentially we're over there by ourselves. Once basketball stops, practice, game, we go back to the house by ourselves. Mm-hmm. I say a car because a lot of the times there's a language barrier. So if I want to go explore and do things, I probably should go on my own, because, I mean, we can't really communicate and stuff like that. So basic necessity. If we go as far as like, oh, well, I can only shower with it, like do certain things, it becomes really difficult.
Mm-hmm. So was that part of the determining factor to head to Mexico, was like the situation and, you know, they were receptive to those things? Like what played into that choice, I guess?
You know, it's a first year league, and it's a lot of great players going down there. So, you know, why not be one of the staples of the beginning of the league? You know?
Get in early. I like it.
It's a lot of heavy hitters going down there. Yeah. I seen, you know, some people just sign like WNBA players. It's going to be interesting.
Mexico pays, right? Because the men's top league down there, the LNBP men's, like, guys make anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 a month, mm-hmm. you know, down there. And so this is the first year for the women, and they're offering pretty good money, you know, for a first year league. So, yeah. I mean, at least what I've been seeing, and the players that, like Akilah was saying, the players that are going down there. So it's going to be interesting to see, but they put their money in the basketball down there in Mexico.
They do.
Stay away from the water. Get bottled water.
I know, right?
How long are you going for, Akilah? Like, what's the commitment?
From April to July.
Okay, so not super, super long. That's nice.
Yeah, not too long.
I think real quick, we'd just like to transition to another league that might be near and dear to your heart. Can you tell us about the Bethel League and what that is? I think, you know, we've had
So the Bethel League is a women's summer league for mainly, you know, pros, college players, anybody that wants to stay in shape, get buckets. My league is more competitive. On the more competitive spectrum. Got 8 teams this year.
Nice.
The original, you know, my goal is to have the young generation be able to see the pros in the DMV area and, you know, get inspired. Like I said, I think Baltimore in general has a bad stigma. We have a lot of great players, great atmosphere, great historical, you know, pieces to Baltimore. And I just want to touch on the women's side of basketball. You know, we always have men's league everywhere. You find somewhere where men are playing.
Yeah.
But I think what sets me apart is that it's competitive, that is so many overseas pros coming to play. You know, I have people flying in, coming to play. And I just really want to expose the younger generation to, like, hey, you can do it. And not, maybe not be old WNBA, but it's a lot of people that make it out, and you can too.
First of all, congrats on starting a league, because I already know how much work that goes into that, and just to plan something to that level. And that was actually how I first, you know, heard about you, was through the league. Oh, I didn't even know you actually played until I started, you know, hearing more about you from different agents and players and things like that, that you actually played. But like, I heard about the league first, which is a testament to how the league was being run, the marketing and the organization of it, you know. So so that was the first time I ever heard about you. But then, like, because, you know, I had a lot of players that played in your league that came to my events since I started working with. And they just spoke highly about the league, how much it helped them stay ready, you know, and you got a good thing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
For fans that might want to check it out, can you give us the where, when, you know, all that
where, kind of stuff? When. So if you follow Bethel League on Instagram, it's at Bethel League on IG. It starts June 4th to August 6th. It'll be every Saturday. We'll be dropping more info and team names and everything coming up soon, but it's going to be really exciting. I have more teams than I had last year, so
it's cool.
Excited about that. And yeah, it's going to be a lit summer.
It's in Baltimore, or is it going to be?
It's in Baltimore.
Okay.
Got to keep the hometown. Got to keep the hometown.
I like it. Are you going to play when you get back? Have you decided yet? What's the thought there?
I'll probably play, shoot some threes.
There you go.
3-point line to 3-point line, huh?
That's as far as I'm going.
At this point in the show, we like to do kind of a little fast break, you know, some quick hitting comments, just kind of first thing that comes to mind, a couple quick answers. I guess just any new foods or new hobbies you've picked up in your kind of overseas experiences?
No, I mean, I haven't eaten bacon in months. I was upset about that, but that's about it.
No, what's the best advice you can give a player about, you know, as they're preparing for their professional career overseas? Like, what would be some advice you would give them?
Not to expect anything. I think stay professional, go over there and do your job. Because like you said, you can always ask for more and do more if you're doing your job. You go over there and do, you know, what they ask you to do. Definitely always protect yourself and definitely find someone to communicate with. If a lot of people are scared to talk to other people, reach out like, hey, how do you do this? Or what was this like? X, Y, and Z. And I think that's foolish. I think we should be more open to communicating with each other, because obviously who knows better than someone that was in your place? And stay in shape. I think that's the hardest thing for me, coming home, getting out of shape, coming back in shape, getting out of shape. It's the hardest thing. But, you know, just work on your skills and remember that you're over there to get buckets.
I like that.
Perfect. Yeah.
I think, you know, anybody who listens to this, who's kind of a couple years behind you, we'll learn some things, and hopefully you can kind of save them some growing pains here too.
All right. Yes.
You mentioned your shows. You got to have the Wi-Fi, watch some stuff. What's the shows you've been watching or binging that have helped you kill time, you know, the last year or so?
Oh, man. So I started watching Bridgerton.
Okay.
What else? Well, obviously Power Book and Force was on while I was overseas. And then I go back to my original OG Friends. I can always count on Friends. You know, it's 10 seasons of Friends, so...
It's good background noise. You can kind of tune out if you need to and not miss anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on it by going without bacon. But what is something that you've had to go without, you know, outside of bacon when you overseas that you're like, man, I'm just missing this right now? If anything.
Everything. Chips, you know, candy. Sir, I know in Turkey, I was struggling a little bit because I was eating burger and fries for like two weeks straight.
Oh, wow.
So it's just kind of getting used to the food and different avenues and aspects, you know. Yeah, they have, because Turkey has more of Turkish food, Turkish delights. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
You know, Ukraine had more of everything that I would normally eat. You know, they had shrimp, they had this, they had that. And you just got to kind of adapt. That's definitely a piece of advice. You got to adapt to food. You can't necessarily be picky unless you do find a McDonald's near you or something.
Yeah, that was me in China. My first like 2 weeks in China, I didn't trust any of the food. I just went to McDonald's every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then I was like, oh. And then, you know, you start to get used to, you know, what the city has and stuff like that. But you got it. You have to adjust quick.
Definitely got to adjust. Yeah. That's why we come back with so much weight loss.
Man.
It's nice to have that option, though, to probably kind of ease into things over there. You know, one staple you can go to just to fill some time.
Yeah, yeah.
Best overseas story, something crazy, something wild. I think everybody's got at least one, it seems like, of just something that we're like, wait, how did this happen? You know, like just kind of craziness.
Well, I got called a black monkey in Czech Republic.
Oh, wow.
By a player, by a fan, like
by a guy on the street. I was walking from the grocery store and his dog was off leash and it was coming up to me. So I put my hand down and it was like, what are you doing? Like, stop, black monkey. And I was like, okay, you're a monkey.
Wow.
But I was kind of like shocked. I was like, you know, let me go find something, a weapon or something, because he's talking crazy. But yeah, I was just like, what?
Probably hard to keep the Baltimore from coming out when somebody's saying something that reckless.
It is, but I know I don't want to go to jail in Czech Republic.
At all.
But yeah, that was my first time, I guess, like experiencing racism overseas. I experienced it in college, but that overseas was different.
Well, it's still backwards in a lot of these countries, especially Eastern European countries. You know, they're so backwards still. And, you know, you see it with what's going on in Ukraine and in Russia. And when it's really they rear its head when conflict comes up. It's underneath the surface unless you're living over there. But once something public happens, then you start to hear about the reports. And it's all, if you've been over there, like I played in Germany, you know, I played in Czech Republic. So like, you know, it's there. It's just that it's different when it comes to your front step.
Yeah, yeah. I was definitely shocked and surprised. I was like, y'all did it over there?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How about on court? Ever have anybody say, I mean, not doesn't have to be that kind of comment, but just somebody say something wild or a coach run like a crazy play, that kind of thing?
No, I normally talk back on the court. So no, just your normal girl banter.
Gotcha.
All right. So we always end the show with somebody that you think we should interview next that maybe has a good story or maybe some, you know, great experiences from being overseas that you know. And you have to help us get them.
Oh, I always throw out Megan Simmons out there, so I'll see if she's available.
Megan Simmons. All right, we'll put it down.
She played in the WNBA for a little bit, right? I know the name.
She went to Tennessee. She played on the past summer.
Got it. Okay. That's why I know that. All right. That'd be great. We definitely appreciate that. Akila, we... taking up a lot of your time already. Anything you would like to plug to listeners here or anything you have going on other than the Bethel League or something that you'd like to, you know, have fans know about?
Not mainly the Bethel League. Just come out this summer, you know, look for location and everything dropping soon. The uniforms are fire.
There you go.
It's going to be so much fun.
I'm in Maryland, so I'm going to come to a game this year. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I already told you I'm coming, so.
Come through. It's going to be different. Got some heavy hitters coming out.
There you go. I like it. Very cool. Thank you again for the time. This was great. I think you such a kind of diverse experience there that it's different from other stuff we've heard about. And I think we probably could ask you another hour worth of questions.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you for having me, guys.
No, thank you, Akila.
Everybody, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will check you next week with another episode.